It's Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. Central Illinois and Bloomington Normal women and some men were counted as part of the estimated 1 million people who marched on Saturday across the United States. An estimated 500,000 marched in Washington, D.C. alone. A variety of causes were attached to the march, which was largely billed as a demonstration in support of women's rights and civil rights. But for many, the march on Saturday was a show of solidarity against the newly sworn-in President Trump, his administration, and policies. In the studio are two women who made the weekend trip to Washington, D.C. and are back in Bloomington Normal today. Marissa Usselton is a local activist and waiter at Luca Grill and student at Heartland Community College. Alexis Spall-Wolstein is the Gender and Women's Studies Librarian at Milner Library. Thanks to both of you for joining us on Sound Ideas today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Let's talk logistics for just a moment before we get to the why. Let's talk about some of the what. Tell me about what it took to get there, to march, and to get back. Alexis?
Well, it's a lot easier said than done. It was a very tight timeline planning this, and there were quite a few rally buses. I know that Marissa traveled with, and large groups of women going that way. I worked with a group that was organized by Dr. Stacey Harden and myself called Activists Mentoring Activists, and it gave us an opportunity to raise funds for students to attend without any cost of their own, without any cost to them. Our main concern was that this is a historic event, and we wanted to make sure that every student who could and every young activist who could have the opportunity to be there. And that turned into weeks and weeks and weeks of planning, fundraising, and then driving two vehicles from Normal, Illinois across the country to the march.
Any question that you would not do this?
I would have found a way personally. Yeah. For me, organizing the way that we did was to make sure that this opportunity was available to anyone who wanted to be there.
And you didn't have to do the driving, but you spent a lot of time on the bus, Marissa.
Yes, the bus ride was absolutely grueling. We did have a bathroom and reclinable seats on the bus, which made it a little bit more comfortable, but it was a very tight squeeze. We lived on a bus for pretty much, you know, two whole days. My hips actually hurt from the constant shifting of trying to find a comfortable enough position to get, like an hour's worth of rest.
You actually spent more time on the bus than you did on the ground in D.C., didn't you?
That is absolutely correct.
So that begs the question, why go through with it?
I went through with it because I feel very strongly about my convictions of what it is to be a woman in this country. And I did not vote for Donald Trump, and I do not support a lot of his views and his rhetoric through his campaigning. And now that he's our president, I feel very strongly about resisting that and not normalizing the kinds of things that him and his cabinet and administration are going to try to press upon us.
Are you seeing evidence of normalizing, though? I am.
I absolutely am. Actually, I have noticed even with some of my coworkers who are very adamantly against Donald Trump that are now saying, oh, we need to give him a chance. And, well, what he said is not that bad. And he's going to turn our economy around. And so now they're kind of, taking back what they had thought initially.
Alexis, tell me a little bit about activists mentoring activists and how many people you were actually able to fund to go to Washington and how that organization works.
Certainly, one of our biggest concerns was not just representing women, but representing everyone who was being affected about this. This isn't just women. This is people of color, trans individuals, LGBT individuals, people who have consistently been placed as in the a place of pressure for our society. And folks, like Marissa said, have been saying, be concerned once things actually start happening for the worse. But we do that, then they've already happened. And within 48 hours, we've seen the LGBT portion of the White House website gone. We've seen the civil rights portion of the website gone. Climate change is gone. These are all issues that the Women's March was concerned about. And so as activists mentoring activists, it wasn't an idea of just older people who have been involved in causes in the past, mentoring younger activists who are coming up, but us learning from each other, because these younger activists are coming with a fresh perspective and a whole new group of civil rights causes that they feel that we need to stand up for, and we want to be able to support them in everything we do.
And what was it like to march with 500,000 other people?
Well, there wasn't really that much marching. it's kind of difficult to move when every single, every single space there was filled with bodies. I keep having people ask me, you know, what was it like? How did it feel to be surrounded by that many people? What did it look like? And frankly, the best views I've had have been the shots I've seen afterwards, because when you're in it, you don't see
it. You're seeing the back of someone's head.
Exactly. And you knew that there was a lot of people there, but to see these aerial shots of, you know, 500,000 plus people, and the number is going to continue to rise from what I've seen, and to know that you were in that body is pretty, it's still hard to comprehend.
And Marissa, you're not in your head. Did your oh wow moment come afterwards when you saw some of the photos?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it was a march, but it was more at a pace of a shuffle. At the end of the march, we were unable to make it to the White House, but we ended up walking up this steep incline of a hill where you could hear a lot of the motorcycles for the pro-Trump people were revving their engines. And we got to the top of this hill, and I looked back, and it was just a sea of bodies behind me that were still marching, you know, in a position that I was at like 30 minutes prior. And that was pretty overwhelming. But yeah, the real impact hit me with the photographs of the things obviously I didn't see when I was there.
And tell me about the speakers you were able to hear. Anyone in particular jump out at you, Alexis?
I mean, to be able to see Gloria Steinem and Angela Davis speak was, of course, stupendous. But seeing a lot of these newer activists, these people that are speaking for the new civil rights causes that we, you know, have built upon the rights that we've won, and unfortunately it looks like we're going to have to continue fighting for those. But Janet Mock, for me, was particularly very inspiring. The young girl, Sophie, who I believe was 6 years old and spoke about her family's plight, both of English and Spanish, was absolutely inspiring. And then Michael Moore had the entire crowd chanting the number to the congressional switchboard, memorizing it so that we could all call that day.
A call and response
until the crowd was chanting the number for him.
And do you have the number memorized?
202-225-3121. You just call that number with your area code, and they'll direct you directly to your representatives. The march is just a first step, and keeping this conversation going is going to be a big part of it. And I think the biggest part is going to make sure that our representatives represent us properly, and calling them and telling them that over and over and over again.
That's Alexis Schwall-Wolstein. Also in the studio, Marissa Usselton. Both traveled to Washington to participate in the Women's March. You're listening to Sound Ideas on GLT. Was there talk there about making this not a moment, but a movement? Not staying in the moment, but looking forward to making it a movement. Marissa?
Absolutely. There are steps that you can take personally, whether you're a man, a woman, it doesn't matter what color you are, what your religion is, what gender you specify as. There are things that you can do to make sure that you stay informed and stay involved. Things like making sure that you're registered to vote and that your registration is accurate. Same thing goes for your friends and family. Another step that you can take is to add your elected officials to your phone contacts on your cell phone and stay in the know and contact them when action is necessary. You can also sign up for representatives' government email list to stay in the know about their town halls. And there's also websites that also allow you to see how your officials voted on certain matters, so you can stay involved with that as well.
And where do you think the sites ought to be targeted for this movement? Is it the midterms? Is it something sooner than that to get Donald Trump to release his tax returns? What do you both think?
I think this is an ongoing battle, an ongoing movement. There isn't going to be a break. There will be causes every step of the way. And if you find the national level too overwhelming, if you are waiting for the big national causes to step behind, in the meantime is the time to get involved locally. We have an extremely active Black Lives Matter group in Bloomington. There are all sorts of different nonprofits in the community. You can support your local Planned Parenthood. There are so many different ways to get involved on the local level, the state level, the national level. And frankly, in my opinion, it's our duty as Americans to be involved in every single part of it.
Sure, there are aldermanic races in Bloomington, a mayoral race in Bloomington, council races in Bloomington, a mayoral race in Bloomington as well. Do you see any of that involvement trickling down, any of the involvement that you saw this weekend trickling down to that extreme local level?
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like a lot of young people are now feeling the desire to take a shot at running for some of these offices that for a long time here in the state of Illinois and even McLean County have gone unopposed. These people are educating themselves on how to get involved and how to run for these offices to truly make a difference. And hopefully when we do that, I myself have considered running for office as well, to really represent what we are as not only a human race, but collectively in our society, to have a bunch of rich white men making decisions for people, I don't think is very, productive and representative of who we are.
Alexis, you're the gender and women's studies librarian at Milner. You're documenting this march and Bloomington Normal's participation in it. It's part of your job. What are you actually doing?
Well, Illinois State University has a long, long history of civic engagement. Even back when we were still Illinois State Normal University, we were involved from the Civil War to World War I to World War II. We actually have a really incredible exhibit going on at Milner this entire semester looking at ISNU's involvement during World War I and the efforts there. And we want to make sure that we continue documenting the civic engagement of our community and of our students at this level as well. We've already had questions from students about where can I find factual information about the Women's March. This idea of alternative facts is extremely distressing, and this idea of fake news is something that librarians have been working against for decades and decades and decades. So for me, the way to show what really happened is to find primary sources, firsthand accounts, photographs. And I'm asking people that were involved at the national marches, at the state marches, at their local level here in Bloomington to send us their narratives, to send us our photographs so that we can gather them, share them with our students, and let them learn from actual documentation and first account of history as opposed to what they're being fed from news sources that we might not be able to trust as credible anymore.
What does it take to preserve a poster or, for that matter, a social media feed? Because a lot of these photos will ultimately be archived in the ether.
Digital preservation, I think, is one of the most exciting things that we have at our fingertips. There are so many different ways to digitize and save high quality images, ephemera, make them available in a variety of formats. We're planning on making these available with a CC license, a Creative Commons license. So as long as you cite your sources and show us where your information is coming from, you can share it in any way, which I think is something that our government could learn from. They can start citing their sources anytime now. But also when it comes to the posters, we have a large, large university archives helmed by our wonderful archivist, April Anderson, who has already expressed interest in preserving these posters, preserving these ephemera. And a large part of it, too, is making it available to the public, because what's the use of preserving it if it's not available to the public?
So you mentioned, alternative facts and fake news. What steps do you have to go through to actually cite all of this so it can be documented that it's real? And is that more important today than it has been in the past?
I would have a lot of angry librarians with me if I said it was more important now than it was in the past. But I firmly believe that it is, because of
the you're way just more in the spot. It's just more in the spotlight.
It's more in the spotlight, and the way that digital information is shared makes it a lot easier to present something as factual, using logos and using information from other sources and bringing them together and distorting that. We think about how we looked at the civil rights marches. We have speeches, we have recordings, we have documented photographs. No one's going in and photoshopping Martin Luther King's face onto documents, although that has been happening online ever since there has been an internet.
Or photoshopping out crowds.
Exactly, exactly. So I think that the clearest way to show what has happened is to have those firsthand accounts from real people, have those photographs that we can document and say, this was taken by this person on this date from this angle, and showing students that you can't just trust, well, and not even students for that matter, everyone, that you can't just trust what the government is feeding you, what the news sites are feeding you. You need to be critical of information. And for me, I think that's why primary accounts are so valuable. valuable.
And you touched on this. How do you think it's going to be used?
I see this being used by students in research. You know, folks have been asking me, like, well, when do you think the students are going to be writing about this in their speeches and their civic engagement courses and their dissertations? And is it going to be months? Is it going to be next year? I've already had research questions from students about the Women's March, trying to find factual information before we even left. So this is going to be something that'll be distributed and necessary immediately.
And Marissa, what's it feel like to be part of that history? You might actually be documented in the library, you know, and in 5 years or maybe even 6 months, a student might be looking at a photo you took for part of the research.
It feels absolutely incredible. With all the alternative facts and fake news, it feels great to be somebody that has been there and has been able to help document something that was very real and it happened in real life.
I guess as a journalist, I would say that I'm ready to move past the phrase fake news and alternative facts. Just call them lies. Can we do that?
Yes, absolutely.
All right. Marissa and Alexis, thanks for joining us on Sound Ideas. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having us.
Marissa Esselton is a local activist, waiter at Luca Grill, and student at Heartland Community College. Alexis Spall-Wolstein is the Gender and Women's Studies Librarian at Milner Library. Thanks to both of you for joining us on Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy.